Zayin Adar, Thursday the 22nd of February, Dain Elimelech Van Zetter. Interest Shailas, a brief overview of Ribbis. Interest Shailas.
Boys, good morning. It's been a while. I missed you. I hope you missed me. But Baruch Hashem, thank you so much. We're here. Zayin Adar, Yorzeit of Moshe Rabbeinu, Sfusay Tagin Aleinu, Baruch Hashem, may we share Torah's Moshe today, discussing some interest shailas. Now, Hilchus Ribbis is mine, Sheilen Sof. Mamish is something, it's a chunk of Shulchan Aruch in your Adar that goes very, very deep. And it is fraught with situations that we may encounter on a daily basis without even realizing that they may present a problem of Ribbis. So I have collated a number of very common shailas that Dayanim with expertise in Ribbis are normally asked. And I want to share some of them with you. It is a brief overview, as stated in the title of the shiur itself. It would be absolutely impossible to give a deeper shiur in the space of half an hour. Now, the first thing we need to understand is, what are the prohibitions of Ribbis themselves, and who would be violating them? Getting involved in a situation like that, who would be violating the prohibition of Ribbis? So it's quite interesting, and I think I'm going to mention someone over here in the description of those who would be violating the laws of Ribbis that is not someone who comes to mind, because we know that the one who lends money and the one who borrows money, they would be violating Ribbis. But there is someone over here that is sort of buried in the Mishnah, and it is a bit surprising. So we find the Mishnah. The Mishnah is in Maseches Baba Metzia, Daf Ein Hei Amud Beis, and the Mishnah teaches that the lender, the borrower, the guarantor — up to this point we are in agreement, yes? The lender, the borrower, that's very obvious. The guarantor, he's doing a service. He's guaranteeing this loan so that the borrower could have the money. But he would also be violating a prohibition of Ribbis if the transaction is an interest-bearing transaction. The witnesses witnessing the agreement would be violating the prohibition of Ribbis, and the scribe, the soifer, drafting the contract. Or, in current terms, we don't use scribes anymore, so who would... The solicitor.
They're always a problem.
The solicitor. Yeah, there you go. The solicitor, the lawyer, the solicitor, would also be violating this very serious prohibition of Ribbis when engaging in any form of interest-bearing loans. And says the Halacha that this is true even if the borrower is a wealthy individual who is willing to pay interest on the money being lent to him. And that is what we found in Shulchan Aruch in Yeridea, in Siman Kuf Samach, Halachas Aleph and Dalet. So before Shulchan Aruch. Now the lender, now we need to trace back these prohibitions. We need to find a source for them in the Torah itself. So let me now outline the various sources for each one of these prohibitions. So the lender would be violating the prohibition: don't take interest from him, don't give him your money for interest, which we find in Sefer Vayikra, Perek Chof Hei, Psukim Lamed Hei and Lamed Vov. So that is the prohibition regarding the lender. The borrower would be violating the prohibition of don't provide interest to your brother. which we find in Sefer Dvarim, Perek Chof Gimel, Pasuk Chof. Their guarantor and the witnesses would be violating the prohibition of don't place interest upon him, which we find in Sefer Shmoyis, Perek Chof Beis, Pasuk Chof Dalet, and the lawyer or the scribe, the solicitor, would be violating the well-known prohibition of Lifnei Iver Loi Titen Michshol. Don't place a stumbling block before the blind, as we find in Sefer Vayikra, Perek Yotes, Pasuk Yuddalit. So each one of these five prohibitions is traced back to the Torah itself. Therefore, they are not rabbinic in nature, but they are rather Isurei Deoraisa. And we're talking, therefore, about the borrower, the lender, the witnesses, the guarantor, and the scribe, and the solicitor. All five categories are enjoined on a Torah level not to engage in any interest-bearing transactions whatsoever. And doing so would be a violation of Torah prohibition. Now, the Torah prohibition includes any loan of money, food, or other items with a fixed return rate. And that is what is called, in halachic terms, ribis ketzutzo. Midrabbanan, other transactions including elements of ribis are avak ribis, and that includes floating rates, or non-guaranteed returns, which is called in loshen, in halachic loshen, ribis she'eino ketzutzo. So ribis ketzutzo is osur midoraisa. Fixed rate ribis is osur midoraisa. Ribis she'eino ketzutzo, ribis that does not have a fixed rate, is osur midrabbanan. Business arrangements that contain elements of interest, for example, ribis derech mekach u'memkar, or resemble interest, which is called merzike ribis, and even favors performed on account of the loan, or excessive praising on the part of the borrower towards the lender, would constitute ribis devarim, and every single one of them would be osur midrabbanan. They're not osur midoraisa, but they are osur midrabbanan. Now, the nafka mina is bedieved. The nafka mina would be bedieved. What do you do? Yes?
Percentage or fixed sum?
Come again?
Percentage or a fixed sum?
No. It doesn't really make a difference. It doesn't really make a difference. If, for example, if a person lends someone, Reuben lends Shimon £100,000, repayable in 10 installments of £10,000 plus 1%. Yeah? That is a percent. That's ribis ketzutzo. If it says, I'll lend you £100,000 and you repay me in 10 months £110,000, so they didn't specify a percentage, but they decide there is a fixed amount, that is also ribis ketzutzo. Yeah? Okay, so we see over here how extensive this prohibition can be. So now, having shared with you the preface to this shir, we're going to be looking at some specific shilas that were asked, and indeed are asked, and people, many of them are not necessarily asked, because people don't necessarily see a problem with the transactions, and they simply go along with it. So one of the questions that is asked is, if we, an investor, for example, an investor who invests in fixed income, yeah, person buys bonds, for example, bonds of Teva Pharmaceuticals, they're not performing very well, I wouldn't advise, yeah, but the person buys bonds of Jewish-owned companies, or the very traditional Israel bonds. Bonds of the State of Israel. Now, if someone invests in fixed income, If I buy, for example, £100,000 worth of bonds of one specific company, and that company is the reason why it is an attractive deal is because that company not only promises to buy back the bond within after a certain number of years at face value, but the company will also be paying me a fixed rate of interest for the next however long it is, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, 10 years, it may be 1% if it is a very well-rated bond, and it may be 12% if it's a very poorly rated bond, anything in between. So what happens if the company is owned by a Jew? Can I buy bonds from that company and I'll be paid interest? I'm buying £100,000 worth of bonds, and this company will pay me 5% per annum. Is this transaction mutter or osser?
It's a public company or it's a private company.
What's the difference? Was nafkamina?
Public company owns, everybody owns it.
This
doesn't have an owner.
You see?
And
What if the person has 51% of the company, has a controlling majority, and decides on the faith of the company?
There's still a difference between a public and private company. The guy says, I'm the owner, so he's not allowed to take
liberties. Public company, we need those shares.
Same thing if you have from Tesco shares, are you allowed to have some Pesach?
It depends who you ask. Some rabbonim will say yes, some rabbonim will say no. My policy, in accordance with Rav Moshe, is you include those shares in the Mechiras Chometz form, but that is a separate shear altogether. Not everyone will paskin in that way, that is just the way I paskin, since you brought it up.
What risk is there?
What?
Is there a risk involved in those bonds or not?
There is a risk of not being paid, of the bonds being defaulted, of the company defaulting on payment. So there is a risk. But that risk exists in any single loan. Even if you take a guarantor, a person might end up having to knock on the guarantor's door to collect the loan. So it's quite interesting. So a company that issues bonds is essentially accepting a loan from the buyer. The buyer, the person who is buying the bonds, is lending money to the company. And one of the reasons why this company is issuing loans and not going to the bank is maybe because the bank wouldn't lend them, or maybe the bank wouldn't lend them such an amount, so on and so forth. Yeah. So the interest they pay would thus seem to be in violation of the laws of ribis. Yeah. Now Rav Moshe Feinstein comes up with a tremendous chiddush, and this is Rav Moshe's chiddush, and I must say, as we're talking about halacha, not everyone agrees with him. That's Rav Moshe's daya, but others disagree with him. Rav Moshe ruled that there is no violation of ribis whatsoever when one is lending to a corporation, even if it is Jewish owned, because the Jewish owners don't carry a personal lien, and the liability is limited to the corporate assets of the company. So Rav Moshe now is mechadish, a tremendous nafkamina between an individual, a person who is subjected to the laws of ribis, and a company, as a legal entity, which according to Rav Moshe is not, there is no prohibition. Rav Moshe is establishing a difference between a person and a legal entity. And that's what we find in Igros Moshe, in Yeredea Chelek Beis, Tshuva Samech Gimel. Someone asked me a question. One second, someone had made a comment there. No? Okay.
There's a difference between public company and private company.
Why?
Because if something goes wrong, public company, you are not personally liable.
And if a private company?
There you are.
No, you're not. You are liable up to the limit. That's why it is a limited company. You're not liable in a limited company. You're not liable with your own personal wealth or assets. That is why it is called a limited company. Your responsibility is limited to the assets of the company.
What's the difference in halacha? Why does it make a difference?
Because Rav Moshe says the Torah is not talking about legal entities. The Torah is talking about individuals.
It's nothing to do with whether or not it does or doesn't have assets.
It has nothing to do with that.
Because if I lend money to an individual,
yeah,
his liability is also limited to his assets.
But Rav Moshe's understanding of this problem over here is that the Torah was never discussing a legal entity. And if the Torah wasn't discussing a legal entity, therefore, there is no problem lending money or buying bonds issued by this legal entity, even if the legal entity will be paying you interest, because it's not something we find in the Torah. Yes?
Unless the company directors are given a personal guarantee. Of course. That makes some liability.
They might be acting as guarantors, but given that the borrower itself is a legal entity, according to Rav Moshe, that would not present a problem of rebis, but needless to say, other halachic authorities, other poskim dispute this, and since they view corporation as a partnership of the various Jewish owners or shareholders, so it doesn't really make a difference if it is a private or a public company, and they are considered, according to these other poskim, they are considered the ultimate borrowers. And therefore, according to them, this transaction would be prohibited, would be osur. So Rav Moshe, it's a tremendous chiddush. Many acknowledge, though, many poskim acknowledge that the prohibition of taking interest from a corporation is midirabbanan, it's not midiraisa, and that is what we find in Minchas Itchok, Chelek Aleph, Tshuva Gimel, and Chelek Dalet, Tshuva Tes Zayin. Some poskim are also maker regarding bonds of the Israeli government, which doesn't even have defined owners. Who is the owner? It is a republic. So who is the owner? Over here, Baruch Hashem, in our beautiful kingdom, we might say there is an ultimate owner, and that is Her Majesty. But in a republic, where everything belongs to the people, then there is no owner. There is no defined owner. So that is the opinion of the Har Tzvi, in your idea, Tshuva Kuf, Chof Vav, says that bonds issued by the Israeli government don't present a problem of rebis whatsoever, because there is no clear and defined owner. Therefore, while it is possible to rely on Rav Moshe's kula, it is of course preferable to subject the bond issued by a company or by the State of Israel to a heter iska, which we shall discuss momentarily. Now, as a matter of fact, the bonds issued by the State of Israel are subjected to a heter iska. So every single issue of Israeli bonds has a heter iska prepared by the chief rabbinate to take care of the rebis and also satisfy the opinions who are not happy with it. If you hold by it, if you don't, that is a separate matter altogether and not the subject of the shiur. Now, there are many authorities who question the widespread usage of heter iska. However, one may certainly rely on a heter iska in conjunction with the other leniencies mentioned. So if we have a heter iska, and then we have Rav Moshe Feinstein's kula saying that a limited company is not really doesn't really transgress the prohibition of rebis, and you have one piled on top of the other, at the end you come out with a clear transaction and a clear conscience. Yeah, and that is what we find. That is the opinion that we find in one of the most important sefers, Sforim on Ilchus Ribis, the Bris Yehuda, in Perek Zayin, footnote 66, and also in this very choshev sefer by Rav Yisrael Reisman, who is Rosh Yeshiva Torah Vadas in New York, the Loth of Ribis. It is on chapter 5, Alocha 26 and 27, and chapter 12, Alocha 37. Now, as I mentioned before, I mentioned the heter iska. Where does the heter iska come from? And there is a bit of background history, of historical background to this question. And it is as follows. With a greater involvement of Jews in banking and commerce, there was a need to enable Jewish financiers to achieve secure returns on their capital without violating the prohibition of ribbis. And to encourage the granting of loans and facilitate modern finance, over the generations, this evolved as what we now call the heteriska. And this was based on an arrangement drafted by Rav Menachem Mendel Ben Avigdor of Krakow over 400 years ago. And this is known as the Tikkun Maharam. And that is what we find in Shulchan Aruch in Yeridea, in Siman Kuf Samach Zayin, Seif Aleph. The heteriska is patterned after a business venture that we find in the Gemara in Baba Metzia on Daf Kuf Dalet Amud Beis, and that business venture is called called Iska. And that is why a heteriska, that's where a heteriska comes from. How does it work? A financier would provide capital to an entrepreneur to open and operate a business for a defined amount of time, after which the capital would be returned and the two would share the profits. To achieve this, half the capital remained the financier's, from which he would take profit, and half was granted as a loan to the entrepreneur, from which the financier would not take profit. In this eventuality of loss, the Jew would share the loss. And that is what we find again in Yeridea, Siman Kuf Ein Zayin, Seif Beis. Rav Moshe Feinstein emphasizes that since the heteriska redefines the loan as a business venture, it is important that both parties understand how the heteriska operates. And that is what we find in Igros Moshe Yeridea, Chelek Beis, Tshuva Samech Beis. So Rav Moshe says over here that if you draft a heteriska and the person is completely ignorant of how it operates, what it entails, so on and so forth, in a way, the validity of the heteriska itself is questioned. Because you're signing on the dotted line without really knowing what you're signing on. So it has to be a serious transaction. It can't be a hocus pocus so as to create a magical effect on the transaction. It has to be a real transaction, and that is why, even though we will not have time now, many question the validity of a heteriska if the money being lent is going to be used for personal use. Because a personal use of the money is not an investment. If you are investing, you know, I need to borrow money. Why? Because I'm going to start a company. That is a business venture. And the person lending the money, he will take a share of your profits. And if Chas v'Sholom, it goes mechule, and the person takes the loss. But if you're lending money so that a person, and you draft a heteriska, so that the person uses the money for a personal matter, however noble and important it is, many authorities will question the validity of a heteriska, because a heteriska is for a business venture. Now, there are leniences, there are kulis associated with it. For example, let's say the person is an entrepreneur, the borrower is an entrepreneur himself, and he has a company. Whatever, it doesn't really matter what's the nature of his business. But he's now in a tough predicament. He either sells off his business to use the money for his personal needs, or he borrows the money from you without selling his business. Given that he has an ongoing business and your money will enable him to continue having this business, so Poiskim say, There we go, we've now identified a business venture that will continue to exist because of this loan, and therefore the heteriska would be valid. But if it is someone who's completely, Ingeman, who is completely far removed, Baruch Hashem, Yoshev Oyalim, is far removed from the business world, it's a bit questionable. It's a bit questionable. It should be debated and spoken about at length with a competent halachic authority in the laws of ribbis before doing something foolish. Yep. Now, another question that we are asked, and this will probably be the final one for today, is whether it is permissible to use a Jewish mortgage broker and bridging loan companies. It's a very recurring challenge. Now, bridging loan companies, I think you've all seen in the past year, there have been letters and letters being sent out about the severity or the necessity of checking if the bridging loan company is owned by Jewish interests, because there is a big difference over here. If you are lending money to the company, then you can rely on Rav Moshe's heter piled on top of the other, as we discussed before. So, lending money to a company, that's Rav Moshe. Yeah? But a company lending money to you and charging interest, there is no Rav Moshe, there is no heter. Yeah? The heter does not extend to a situation in which the company is the one lending you the money and you are paying interest. So that would be different, yes?
How can it be it doesn't work both ways? Either it's an individual or else it's a legal entity.
I understand. Baruch Hashem, that may be the subject of our next year, Baruch Hashem. So, although a Jew may not lend to another Jew with interest, it is permissible for him to serve as a loan officer in a non-Jewish bank. So if anyone is offered a position over here as a loan officer in a non-Jewish bank, you may take the job and it doesn't really make a difference, even if you're handling applications from your fellow Golders Greeners. It doesn't make a difference. Since it is clear that the money is not his, it's not the loan officer's, and he is serving only as an agent. Similarly, it is permissible to take mortgage through a Jewish mortgage broker if the mortgage capital is provided by a non-Jewish bank or if the Jewish bank has a kosher heter iska in place. And the broker is serving only as a mediator or as a facilitator. This is permissible even if the broker takes a fee for his services. Even the mortgage broker is taking a fee, 1%, whatever it is, that is a fee for his services, and that is not interest on the amount being lent. And that is what we find in Shulchan Aruch, again in your idea, Siman Kuf Samach Gimel, Sif Chof Gimel and Chof Dalet, and there is Shach in Sif Kotten Ein Aleph. Now, what?
Why is it not over?
Because the bank is not Jewish. It's a Goyish bank.
There's no Isser.
The borrower is a Yid, the loan officer is a Yid, but the lender is not Jewish. And therefore, there is no prohibition of ribbis. Either way. What? So a bridging loan company or a Jewish-owned bank, on the other hand, often grants the loan from their own capital, and then they sell the mortgage to another bank. And that is what caused the 2008 financial crisis in America and in the world. In this case, it is not permissible to take a loan from a Jewish-owned bank or a bridging company unless they have a heter iska in place, because the loan is initially granted by the Jewish-owned company with a stipulation of interest, and because they maintain the loan for a short time, and it doesn't really matter if they grant you the loan and then sell it somewhere else, or if they are the ones holding the book for as long as it takes you to repay them, it would be osur unless there is a heter iska in place. A person considering taking a loan from a bridging company or from a Jewish-owned bank should first verify its ownership, and that is what we find in this sefer, in Rav Reisman's sefer, in Perek Yud Gimel, Aloches Chof Dalet and Chof Hey. And if it is difficult to ascertain, then the situation should be discussed with a Rav. I do not want to be over Gezelsman, so I'll stop here, but thank you so much for...